Again, thank you for joining us. I'd like to talk a little bit about the Latino Outreach Council. Can't see without my glasses. We were founded in 1994. The SLO Latino Outreach Council is a nonprofit organization who is dedicated to facilitating the equal and full participation of all its members of the Latino community in the life and affairs of the county. The council promotes progress in the Latino community through advancement in education, participation in community affairs, and increasing knowledge about and access to relevant services. We also work to identify and facilitate the removal of barriers that inhibit the Latino community's participation in community and civic affairs, which is why we are hosting these candidate and informational forums, and we are providing those with Spanish translation, which we will have over here up front, should you need those services. Our next televised forums will be the 2nd District Board of Supervisors Forum on April 30th from 5 to 8 at the Morro Bay Veterans Memorial Building, and the County Clerk Recorder on May 14th from 5 to 8 at the County Board of Supervisors Office in their chambers. So we invite you to participate and attend. It's my pleasure to introduce our panelists this evening, which are going to be asking our candidates questions. And so our first panelist is Dee Santos. She's a longtime business owner in the Five Cities area, an employee of Marshall Spoo's Sunset Funeral Home for 35 years, current chair of the Grover Beach Parks and Recreation Department, and former council member and mayor of Grover Beach. Current member of Lucier Mar Unified School District Board of Trustees. Welcome. Charlotte Alexander is a freelance writer, book author, and editor, film producer, and nonprofit consultant. She currently serves as the managing director of the San Luis Obispo International Film Festival. She previously served as CEO of several SLO County nonprofit organizations, including the United Way, the Emergency Medical Services Agency, and the County Arts Council. She is an elected trustee of the San Luis Obispo County Community College District, Cuesta College. Representing the 4th Supervisorial District, she serves as the vice president of the Board of Trustees and sits on the Cuesta College Foundation Executive Committee. She's a member of the Women in Film, the League of Women Voters, and the Monday Club. Her husband, Dave Congleton, co-wrote the book, When Your Pet Outlives You, Protecting Animal Companions After You Die, and she served as an associate producer on the independent feature film with David that David wrote, Authors Anonymous, which opens in theaters in the U.S. and Canada on April 18th. Yay. Welcome, Charlotte. Tom Iqueta, a third-generation farmer, is a partner with his 3 cousins in the Iqueta Brothers farming operation where he serves as corporate secretary and farm manager. Iqueta Brothers grows fresh, diversified vegetable crops and specializes in oriental vegetables. He's part of the families of growers known as the Pismo Oceano Vegetable Exchange, where he currently serves as its president. He's a graduate of Rio Grande High School and earned a Bachelor of Science degree in Agricultural Science and Management from the University of California, Davis. He is also a graduate of the Leadership SLO and California Agricultural Leadership Program. And he's been past president of San Luis Obispo County Farm Bureau, where he continues to serve as one of its directors and also chairs their legislative committee. He sits on the Agricultural Liaison Advisory Board as an appointee of Adam and Hill, Supervisor District 3. He is also the past chairman of Grower Shipper Association of San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara Counties. And in 2010, Tom was elected by the San Luis Obispo County Farm Bureau as Agriculturalist of the Year. Welcome, Tom. Jose Guzman currently works with the Community Health Centers of the Central Coast in the area of health promotion and mental health outreach, Prior to joining CHC, Jose worked as a television news anchor for the local Telemundo and Univision affiliates. He is a past member of the Rotary Club of Santa Maria, the Santa Barbara Mariachi Festival Board of Directors. He's currently a member of the Pastoral Council at the St. John Newman Catholic Church in Santa Maria, and has served on various committees who organize health fairs for migrant farm workers, including the Binational Health Conference in collaboration with the Mexican Consulate in Oxnard. He is also a current member of the Latino Outreach Council Board of Directors. Thank you so much for all the work that you do on our board.
Well, thank you very much, and I want to thank everyone for being here. It's a little odd that we're not able to face you, but the most important people in the room are facing you out front, and we are delighted that so many of you came out this evening to hear these candidates. The Latino Outreach Council really does strive to provide an opportunity twofold. One, for the candidates to have an opportunity to shine, an opportunity to advise the public as to their opinions, let the people know who they are, so that you, the voters, can be an informed voter. And I really appreciate the fact that every candidate has agreed to participate in tonight's forum, and I want to thank you very much. Let me tell you a little bit about the format for this evening. We had asked the public to send in questions to our Latino Outreach Council email address. We did receive over 45 questions. Some of them were as long as a page. So they have understandably been whittled down and reworked, but I think that we were able to condense many of the questions into 16 questions, which I have in my hand. Each of the candidates has been provided with a copy of the questions that were originally submitted so they can have an opportunity to know what their constituents are thinking about. And they also have a copy and in advance of the questions that are going to be posed. The panelists, who I want to thank for volunteering their time this evening, had no part in crafting these questions. They are simply here to pose the questions to the candidates. Each candidate is going to start with a 3-minute opening, and the order in which they do so was done by draw earlier this evening. And each candidate will give a 3-minute close at the end of our question and answer period. With regard to each question, each candidate will have a 2-minute opportunity to respond to the question, and there will be no opportunities for rebuttal. Due to time constraints and the fact that this is a televised program, we are not going to be taking questions from the floor. I will be moderating in terms of letting the panelists know whose turn is next and also letting the candidates know the time and giving them a 15-second warning. With that, I will warn you that this is my first day talking. I've had laryngitis since Friday. So everybody knows that if my voice fails, that I will be doing hand signals. We also have an agreement that everyone can be called by their first name, so I will be referring to everyone by their first name. Please turn off your cell phones if you have them with you. And I would also like to ask if there are any Latino Outreach Council board members who are in a seat to please give up their seat to one of our guests this evening. Okay, so with that, we are going to start with Tom, who will pose the first question. Excuse me, strike that. Oops, I'm not in court. We're going to start with our 3-minute openings, and we will start with Karen Ray.
Hi, everyone. I was afraid I was going to have to embarrass myself with my reading glasses, but the light is so bad up here, so forgive me. The decision for who you're going to choose tonight as your next supervisor is huge, and I just want to thank each and every one of you for taking time out of your schedules to come down here and educate yourselves rather than going with word of mouth. You're here to hear it from us. And, you know, this is our job to get out here and talk, but for you, this is your time out of your families. So thank you so much for being here. I want to thank the LOC for putting this on. So thank you so much for taking the time to do that, and AGP Video, who always does a great job. So to introduce myself, I am your current supervisor, Karen Ray. I've been your supervisor now for a little over 6 months, and during that time I've met many of you in this room about the issues that you're passionate about, including water, Viva Farms, Phillips 66, PM10, Porter Ranch, Leticia, and others. Others of you in this room that I've met, we've helped you with specific problems. The most amusing one has been, there's a boat in my driveway. How do I get rid of it? These are the kinds of things that we deal with while you're not watching. The issues that we're going to talk about tonight are complex, and they're integral to our community, and they don't have one-size-fits-all answers. And I've been told that the people really just want a one-sentence answer. They want to keep it simple. But if the issues facing the Board of Supervisors were simple, we wouldn't need a Board of Supervisors. It's really difficult to get these complex issues mashed into a two-minute answer. So I want to encourage you that if you hear anything tonight, I suppose I can speak for all of us, but for me, that you need a more complete answer, please email me. You can reach me at electkarenray.com. I wanted to say a word about it. Don't be fooled by that. Look past fear, look past the rhetoric, and look for real, positive solutions and suggestions. Do not allow them to falsely earn your trust by spreading fear. The use of fear is meant to do only one thing, to distract you from the big elephant in the room, that experience matters. You're faced with a huge decision, and ballots go out in 19 days. Your decision is a four-year decision. Where were you 4 years ago? 4 years is a long time, perhaps longer than the issue that brought you here. In other words, many of you are here to talk about one thing that you're passionate about. When that issue's gone, who are you going to trust to make those decisions? This forum is part of that decision for you to make a four-year commitment. In the end, demand excellence. Thank you.
Thank you, Karen. Okay, our next speaker will be Lynn Compton.
Good evening, everybody. Again, I want to thank you all for coming. I know we all have family commitments and things we need to be doing tonight, so I really appreciate you all coming down for a political rally and political conversation tonight. I wanted to introduce myself. My name is Lynn Compton, and I am running for 4th District Supervisor. My husband and I are long-term residents of Napomo. We live within walking distance from here and have been here 20 years. The reason I'm running for supervisor, and if you would have asked me 5 years ago if I would have done this, it would have been the last thing on my mind to do, but I believe there are a lot of really important issues right now that are going on with this county, issues that affect fundamental rights. And I feel like the decisions that are made regarding these issues are going to affect our lives for a decade, if not more. Issues like our water supply, what are we doing to maintain and create new opportunities for that? Issues like property rights. There are a lot of issues revolving property rights and the water that go hand in hand. Issues like, what's going to happen with housing down here in Napomo? When we moved to Napomo, it was very rural. The Vons wasn't even located here. And I see decisions being made by this current Board of Supervisors that change that quality of life and way of living that we moved down here for. So it concerns me when they're making decisions that affect me. I believe I'm the only one of the three of us that lives in the unincorporated area that this position will have jurisdiction over. So these decisions are going to affect me living in Napomo in the unincorporated area. I come to this position and the decision to run with a business background. I graduated with an ag degree from Purdue University many years ago and have worked in the ag business for years. This county is very heavily supported by agriculture. It's one of the top industries that supports this county. My husband and I own an agricultural business in Santa Maria. We've been in business 20 years, successful company that we built from scratch. No one handed it to us. I believe when you approach this position, you need to approach it from a business perspective and look at decisions and what will benefit all of your constituents, not one particular segment, but look at what will benefit the entire community. If you like the course that Paul was on, I guess I would say, look at which one of us supported Paul. It's very easy to do that. Go to the county website and pull the 460s and look who was there and supported Paul in the past. You will see our name on that. We met with Paul and supported him on all the issues that he worked with down here in Napomo. So look for things like that. Look, when you make your decision, look at who each one of us has as endorsers on our list, and I think you'll find a majority of Paul's endorsers are on my list. So I guess I would just leave you with that. If you'd like to continue with the course that Paul left with us, then I believe I'm the candidate that you would be interested in choosing for your supervisor.
Thank you very much, Lynn. And now we'll hear from Michael Bird.
Good evening. Everybody nice and warm and cozy in here? It's pretty miserable, isn't it? I want to start with a story, and I think some of you have heard it, but when you hit a certain age, you tend to take good stories and repeat them a lot. A couple weeks ago, I had to go in for my physical to see my doctor. I have to see once a year to get my prescription renewed. And he asked why my blood pressure was a little high, and he lives in Cayuga, so he doesn't know what I'm up to. So I told him that I was running for office, told him what I was up to, and he said, "My God, you know, you should have told me you were thinking about that. I could have referred you to a psychiatrist." And I'm starting to think maybe I should have. Anyhow, I'm Mike Bird. I've done a lot of things in my time. I've been a truck driver, newspaper editor, worked for 8 years for a member of the Kern County Board of Supervisors. Moved here 20-some years ago, two and a half decades ago, started a real estate company, and I've been running that business, or a couple of real estate businesses ever since. During the time I've been here, I've always maintained that people should be involved in their community. It's not just going to work and going home and making money. You know, it's making the community a better place to live. I've been involved, you know, the whole time I've been here. I've been on the board of Big Brothers Big Sisters, helped found Junior Achievement, helped found the Price House, Friends of the Price House. You know, it just goes on and on and on. I've been president of the Grover Beach City Council, on the board of Rio Grande City Council. So, you know, so I've always, you know, done what I could to improve our community, because I think that's what good citizens are supposed to do. And I think that background sort of proves my commitment to this community. You know, I'm just not talking the talk. I've walked the walk ever since I've been here. You know, being in business, as Lynn referred to, you know, that does bring a certain skill set to the board that I think is valuable. It's a little bit different than being in, you know, just government. On the other hand, I have 8 years' experience with a board of supervisors, so I understand the business, I understand the government, and I think...
Okay, and now we'll get started with our questions. Tom, your first question.
What is it about you that you believe makes you the most qualified person for this position, and why do you want this job?
And we'll start with Karen.
Well, without question, I'm the most qualified person for the job. And I've served in local government for over 9 years, and I have a long-standing voting record that you can go back and take a look at. This is why I have such widespread support across industries and across party lines, which you can find at my website, electkarenray.com. Just go to the endorsements page. I cut my political teeth at the Arroyo Grande Planning Commission, and I chaired that commission for over 3 years, democratically elected by my peers every time. That was not a rotation. I served on the Arroyo Grande City Council, where I helped us manage a $25 million budget through the toughest economic downturn of our lifetime. And now I'm your supervisor, helping manage a $500 million budget and carefully watching every dollar as though it was my own. Neither of my opponents have experience like this. And I want this job quite simply because I like to help people and I like to solve problems. There's nothing in it for me. I don't own a business that will benefit from me being supervisor. I don't own property that will benefit from this job. I left a job that paid the same amount of money, except for I got vacations and summers off and I was home by 4 p.m. On top of that, this job can be thankless and it can be cruel. So why did I do it? And why do I still want to do it? It's the same reason I chose teaching. I get to help people on a scale that it's impossible to do in any other way. Every one of my constituents matters to me. And when I was a council member, my family was 17,000 people. And as your supervisor, my family's expanded to over 50,000 people. Every one of my constituents matters. It's my privilege to serve the community that I've lived in for over 33 years. It is my honor to give back to the community to ensure that my children grow up with the same values and experiences that makes District 4 so special to all of us. And that's why I want to keep this job. Thank you.
Thank you. Same question, Lynn.
I believe I'm the most qualified person for this job because I look at what it takes to run a county and I look at the business experience in my background. I briefly touched upon it when I gave you a little about my background in the entry, but for almost 30 years I've worked in the private sector, and I think when you have people in government telling people in the private sector what they can and can't do, you take a different perspective on it. In working in the private sector since graduating from college, I've worked for two Fortune 100 companies that are both multinational companies back to back. I've never been unemployed. My husband and I created a business about 20 years ago. It's a large business. We do not sell directly to growers. We do not sell directly to the public. We sell to growers all along the coast of California. And I think you're making decisions in a business that are similar to the decisions that you're making as a board of supervisors. You have to look where the money needs to go, where it would benefit the greatest amount of people, et cetera. I think it's really important to look at the private sector. When you look at this county, over 70% of the income in this county is generated by small businesses, and those are businesses that are four people or less. So I have an understanding of those small businesses. I know what it takes to hire people, to fire people, and to make a payroll. I know what every day we have to face when we are faced with all the regulations that not only Sacramento but our local county government pushes down upon us. And I always say it's like death by a thousand cuts. And I think people that have not run a small business, whether they be teachers, whether they be coming out of some other industry, if you haven't run a small business, you don't understand how difficult it is. Look at the small businesses that are leaving California. They're leaving in droves. It's one of the most difficult places to operate a small business. The average cost of regulation to a small business in California is $130,000 a year. That's one or two extra employees that we could hire. Jobs, to me, are critical in this county, and I look at this county and I look at South County, and we're not faring as well as San Luis Obispo. We have a higher unemployment rate in Napomo. We have a higher unemployment rate in Oceano. We're not faring as well. I don't think the solutions that necessarily Sacramento or San Luis Obispo have are what's best for us down here. So in my mind, jobs are the most important issue. It's fine and dandy to talk about housing and talk about other things we want, but if you don't have jobs down here, you don't need housing and people are leaving, and you can't do it all with the government. The government can't do it all. You need the private sector to pay for your government. So I think that's what I bring to the table. I think I bring my business background and my business experience for over 30 years.
Thank you, Lynn. Your time is up. Thank you. I'm sorry. Mike?
By golly, I think we found something we disagree about. Imagine that. I obviously think I'm the most experienced. like Lynn, I do have business experience, and I have for a long time. And I think that is important because I think, and I agree with Lynn on this, that I have a set of experiences that would serve the county well. Thank you.
Thank you. Dee?
There are many contentious issues developing in the South County. Please describe your qualities, background, and experience that make you the best person to build consensus and negotiate compromise between the contentious factions.
Hey, we'll start with Karen.
Again?
Yes.
Okay. Sorry, I didn't realize I was going to go first right away. Pardon me. Not only do I have these innate qualities and consensus building compromise, I have a record of doing this as your supervisor. So I want to give you three examples of this. The first one was my first day at the dais. When I took office, many of you watched that day. And I took office, actually, technically speaking, on the Friday before the Tuesday that you saw me get sworn in. And the first thing I did was I wanted to make a gesture to the county because there was a lot of fear about partisanship and lack of consensus building. So I went to Frank Meacham and I asked him if he would be willing to switch around seats at the dais as a symbolic gesture to the county. And he said, talk to the other supervisors. If they're in, I'm in. So I talked to Debbie, who's here tonight. I talked to the chair, who's, I guess, not here tonight. And we all together, it was no question, everybody was ready for it. Everybody was ready to shake things up and make that gesture to the county. And since then, over 90% of our votes have been nonpartisan 5-0 votes. I can talk more about that later, but the second one I wanted to talk about was the vesting rights vote. We took a very controversial vote on the first day that I was at the dais, and that was the urgency ordinance. But the real sticky one was 4 weeks later when we were looking at the vesting rights. In other words, it's one thing to say you have to offset, but if you were halfway through a planting, do you have to offset now? If you're a quarter of the way through, do you have to offset now? At what point do you draw the line? And that's where the fighting was to begin. And the day after the urgency ordinance, I went into Frank's office and I said, I'm going to spend my Brown Act vote on you. This vote only needs to go 3-2. I want a 5-0. We need to demonstrate unity to the county. And 4 weeks later, that's exactly what we got. We all reached across the aisle. Together we crafted an ordinance. It was me crafting it with the help of Debbie Arnold. We got that through, and it was a miracle. I floated out of the chambers that day. That we were able to make that demonstration to the county. And you know why you don't know what I'm talking about? Because the newspaper didn't cover it. Because it's not controversial enough. Things have changed. And I'm going to run out of time here before I get to my third one, but we'll talk about my voting record a little bit later. Thank you.
Thank you, Karen. Lynn.
Well, I believe building consensus and negotiating compromise is very important, and I don't think you can get through life working for any business without doing that. If you're working for a large corporation, you're negotiating. If you have employees that work for you, you're negotiating their salary. You're negotiating hire-on packages. In our business, we're negotiating all the time to build consensus. We're talking to our suppliers and trying to get a better deal. They're negotiating to not give us as good a deal. We're talking to our customers and negotiating with them. You negotiate with your children every day. So it's basically a part of life, and you do have to negotiate and give and take on the board. I truly believe this board is a divided board. I think you have a 3-2 split on a lot of issues with this board. And let's be honest, this is a swing vote seat. It wasn't a swing vote seat in the past. When Debbie got on the board, it became a swing vote seat. So the decisions made by this supervisor will be the direction that this county goes in for the next 4 years. Besides it being a swing vote seat, I think it's important to recognize, and I tallied all the votes since Ms. Ray got on the board, she votes with two of the other supervisors 96% of the time. So when you look at consensus, you're not always going to get a consensus on every issue that comes up before the board. Additionally, later in life, I decided to go to law school, and actually I just graduated when I turned 50. It was something, a goal that I had always had in life and wanted to do, and this was the only time I could have done it in my career because I had moved around so much. I think one of the things that they teach you in law school is you don't want to go to court. You want to negotiate a settlement out of court. You want to look at areas of commonality. One of the things that Ronald Reagan did was look at, even if it's a small, minuscule area where two parties have something in common, they start on that basis and try to come forward and build consensus upon that. And then, you know, that's how you do it. You start little, and then you go for the bigger issues. That's how I've done it my whole life. I tell people that having twins, I have 12-year-old twins, you have to build consensus with children and a husband, or you won't be successful in marriage or in life.
Thank you, Liv. Mike.
Building consensus is something I've done for a living for the last 20-some years. I was trying to explain to her, and she said, oh, so you want to be the swing vote? No. I do not want to be the swing vote. If I told her, if I am the swing vote, I'll consider myself a failure. What I want to be is the guy who overcomes the politics and gets the county running as everything based on what's good for the district, what's good for the county, what's good for the people, what's good for the government, not what's good politics.
Thank you. Charlotte Alexander will pose our next question, and we'll mix it up and start with Mike.
Okay. This question is about the Phillips 66 request for a rail spur. What do you believe are the issues, the positives, and the negatives? and how would you resolve the negatives? And you've got a whole 2 minutes.
Well, actually, for me, that's probably pretty simple. The chief issue with me, the chief concern with me, are the trains. And I've made no bones about it. I've been to all the meetings. I've read all the documentation. I have a hard time with the trains. I don't think they should be allowed. The only way we can deal with that is to deal with the rail spur project, because we have no control as a county, not over the trains, what they carry, what this stuff is carried in, the type of cars it's carried in, or even knowing what's in the cars. You know, the federal government has taken that all away to where they don't even inform us what's coming through when. And, you know, when you think about it, a train track that has a history of mishaps, you know, there's a derailment, the last most serious one was the one between Grover and Pismo Beach back in the 80s, I believe it was. But there have been a series of them over the years, that, you know, from the Cuesta Grade on down, and we don't need, you know, the environmental damage, or if some of the Bakken crude is involved, the devastation that could result from that kind of mishap, I don't think is a safe way to transport it. I understand it has to be brought by surface over the Rockies. There are no pipelines, but once it's in California, then my way of thinking, it should be stuck in a pipeline and shipped here to the refinery just the way it's always come.
Thank you. Lynn?
For those of you that aren't living down here in Napomo and aren't familiar with the project, there is a refinery here in Napomo on the Mesa, and they have requested the addition of a rail spur, basically a parallel track of five tracks, to bring in different types of crude. There is currently a revised draft EIR in the works that will come out for public comment. I believe it's a 45-day period for public comment, and then a final EIR will come out on the project. There have been several meetings in the county where people have voiced concerns, complaints, comments. There were over 800 comments submitted to the county. You can go on the county website, pull down the EIR, and read them. There are, like any project, there are positives and negatives to the project. Phillips 66 has requested this to stay competitive. They employ 200 people at that facility. They believe they can't stay competitive without it. These are good-paying jobs, over $100,000 apiece. They contribute about $2 million to our tax base with property taxes, and about $500,000 to $1 million with the APCD fees they pay. They're a good neighbor, and they're generous to the community. Concerning to me with this whole project is the fact that if you look at California, we import 2 million gallons a day of oil, of barrels of oil a day, just to operate in California. And of those 2 million gallons, 60% of that comes from overseas. It comes from countries that don't like us. So I don't like that. That bothers me that we import that much in. Do I think we should wean ourselves off of oil? I think we would probably all agree in this room that that would be a good thing to do. But I don't think you can do it overnight. I think you have to be realistic about it. If you do it overnight, you're sending businesses out of California. As much as we'd like to be energy independent, it's not going to happen overnight. There are negatives about this project. If you read the comments that were submitted, people are concerned about health and safety. They're concerned about dust. They're concerned about issues with water usage. They're concerned about air pollution and the safety of a tanker overturning like we've seen in other countries. So those are serious safety concerns. I think the process is rolling out as it should roll out. People are making public comments. The county is looking at these issues and looking at whether they will decide to go forward with it or not. If they decide to go forward with this project, there will be mitigating factors that the county says this is required you do to mitigate these factors, whether it be noise, whether it be light, etc. And I do think there are some legitimate complaints with the project. I guess I would disagree a little bit with Mike in you can't bring it over the Rockies by pipeline.
Thank you, Lynn. Karen?
Thank you. The health and safety is too important. It is number one. And what I've done in between since the last time I spoke to many of you and now is I've been reaching out to the state level. And I found out some very interesting things that I'll be sharing tomorrow out at Trilogy. But the first thing is emergency response is a very interesting process that is not currently funded properly through the state of California. This has been brought to my attention by the governor's office, and this is such a huge issue. You're going to be seeing legislation about this coming forth, and hopefully we'll be looking at filling those holes, the gaps. Again, I'm trying to hurry because we only have 2 minutes. Again, this is very complex. I am sitting on this issue every single day, reaching farther up, as far up the chain as I can reach on behalf of this district to make sure that we are protected and we are prepared so that if and only if this project goes through that we can mitigate anything that can go wrong. I'm not sure, but I'm doing everything I can to make sure that we know what that answer is. Thank you. Great.
Thank you, Karen. Okay, our next question will be posed by Jose, and we'll be starting with Mike again.
The mission of the Latino Outreach Council is to build bridges to include the participation of the Hispanic community in government and civic affairs. What have you accomplished that is consistent with those goals within your career, professional dealings, or volunteer service? How do you see this particular vision being carried forward in the future, and what role will you play in accomplishing this?
As I said before, I've been involved in the community for a long, long time. I've been a big brother, and I've learned a lot about, you know, compassion and working with people who don't always have had the same advantages I may have had or a lot of the people in this room may have had. Same thing with junior achievement, going into the classroom and working with kids from, you know, and I'm sure Karen can attest to this, from all kinds of walks of life is important. And I think this organization needs to be encouraged. I think Debbie Arnold is here. I think she's on the board now. And I think that we need to continue to build the bridges. I've always been there to help out wherever I can, and I hope I'll be here a long time longer being able to do the same.
Thank you. Lynn?
Well, as you stated, leveling the playing field and having the opportunity to participate in society are two of the goals. So let me tell you what we as business owners have done. In our business, we employ 15 to 20 people given the time of year. 90% of our employees are Hispanic. 90% of our employees have been with us for 15 plus years. We have families that work with us. We offer them health benefits. They get a vehicle. They participate in business decisions. That's what we've done. I think the most important thing you can do with the Hispanic community is lift them up and provide good jobs for them, and that's what we've consistently done for 20 plus years. Our number one salesman is Latino, and he makes more money than my husband, so we're good with our employees. We have a retirement plan. I think that's the Latinos don't want things that are different from what you and I want. They want a home, they want a family, and they want a good job. And that's what we do and have done consistently for 20-plus years for the Hispanic community. Our customers, 90% of our customers are Hispanic. We have partnerships with them. If we didn't have partnerships with them, we wouldn't have a successful business. They're immensely important to us. So that's what I've done in my recent 20 years for the Hispanic community to lift them up.
Thank you. Karen?
The mission of the Latino Outreach Council is a very important one, and it's very important for me to support that as your supervisor. I have a long background serving this community, which informs my decisions as your supervisor. My entire professional career was spent teaching in a school that's 92% Hispanic, 66% limited English proficient, and 33% ELD, which means English language development, and almost 100% free and reduced lunch. I've attended numerous events over the years, charity and community events, parent conferences that make me acutely in tune with the needs of this community. As your supervisor, I've contributed community funds to the LOC, most recently to underwrite the Latinas in Education Forum. I've also been working diligently in the upcoming grant funding allocations that happen annually to make sure that the organizations that we support support the needs of the Latino community, as well as the indigenous populations who do not speak the same languages nor do they call themselves Latino. But the most valuable thing I can give is my time. Just last week, I participated as a panelist, sharing my expertise with the community members interested in helping Latinas succeed in higher education at the Latinas in Education Forum. Additionally, I've devoted many hours on that.
Ag is hugely important to this county. It contributes over $861 million. It's the number one driving engine in this county. Not only does it employ 1 in 20 people, those jobs are multipliers in this county. So it's ag and tourism are the two largest income contributors. It's hugely important in this county. What would I suggest to do to keep ag viable for family farms? Number one, ensure a stable workforce for agriculture. We have growers right now that tell us that 50% of their crops rot in the field because they have nobody to pick them. So a workforce is very important for agriculture. What else would I do? I would stop implementing ordinances and regulations that hurt small businesses. These farms are small businesses. When you add taxes, when you add regulations, you're killing these businesses and they're leaving the county. An example of our businesses, about a third of our growers now are growing down in Mexico because of the rules and regulations that California has implemented to prevent them from using certain products. So now we're importing crops in. Our growers are going down there and growing. Because of feel-good regulations that really don't do anything and have lots of unintended consequences. So I'd stop passing regulations that kill small businesses. That's what I would do to continue farming. I'd also encourage young growers, FFA, 4-H, to get involved in the business and stay here because it's really a great way of life, and it's really South County is very heavily vested in agriculture, and it's the reason we moved here and live here.
Thank you, Lynn. Karen?
I never know who's coming next. It's always a surprise. Since I grew up in the big city, Arroyo Grande, immediately after taking office, I reached out to the Farm Bureau and our local farmers in the South County to be sure that I knew what their needs were. I heard three things loud and clear. First, regulations are truly suffocating our family farmers. While these regulations are largely imposed by the state, not by the county, they are horrible nonetheless. We recently voted at APCD to streamline some of our permitting processes to help. We can't get rid of the regulation because that comes from the state, but we can make the implementation of that easier on the farmers. Second, I heard that they need the ag clustering option to help keep them financially afloat. I'm a big proponent of ag clustering in general as a tool for our farming families. Third, I heard about issues related to the ag-urban interface, especially as it relates to the Leafy Greens marketing agreement. That was new to me, so if you don't know what I'm talking about, I'll try and explain. An example of this is as if you walk your dog through a field and your dog does, well, you know what dogs do, that entire field could be rendered unusable for that farmer. And this is a matter of public education. Nobody intends for that to happen. It's just a lack of awareness. And this is a place where the county can help. You can too. I encourage you to do what I did, which is I went out and did gleaning. I gleaned for a day. And that's where you go out and you go to the fields and you get educated about what food safety looks like, what happens in the field, what does it look like from a farmer's point of view, and what does it look like from the picker's point of view. And I'll tell you, I'm a terrible picker. But I learned a whole lot from this. You can, if you want, go to my Facebook page and see me with a lovely picture with my hair in a net and gloves all over me. It was quite an education, and I'm sure that you'll appreciate the plight of the family farmer if you can just go out there and learn about what they're facing every single day. It's much more complicated than you think. Thank you.
Thank you, too. Mike.
Well, there's something I agree with Karen on. I'm a terrible picker too. I remember when I was young, I spent a summer vacation picking cotton, and that is the worst job there is, trust me. I didn't make enough to buy lunch. One thing that I think, you know, farmers, and Tom knows this better than anybody, are business people. And they have to run the farms like a business. And a lot of businesses, especially small family businesses, as the question related to, you know, they have to be able to change plans. They have to be able to diversify. They have to be able to change with the times. And one thing that is going to be coming back up and is going to be the events ordinance. And I think that is going to prevent small family farmers from being able to diversify when, you know, that comes. And I think it's been put delayed for what I consider to be political purposes. But I think when this election is over, and if Mr. Gibson is reelected and if Karen is elected, then I think we're going to see that come up, and I think we're going to see it passed. And that's the kind of thing that cannot happen if we want to preserve family farms.
Thank you. Our next question will be asked by Dee, and we'll follow the same pattern. It'll be Lynn, Karen, and Mike.
I knew I'd get this question, but the APCD rule requires that oceanic roads,
when you look at agriculture, it's a catch-22. Are there things that can be done in agriculture? Sure, you can plant cover crops, things like that. But there are definitely things that can be done to work on the problem and correct the situation. State Parks has agreed and is doing different things right now, including putting up fencing and things to block the wind. So I don't think it's an all-or-nothing type situation where you have to shut something down for good air quality. I think it's you mitigate and you work with what you can to decrease it. And benefit everybody with their health, especially those people, especially in that area where you have a lot of elderly people and people with health issues. So I think it's a South County issue, not just a Napomo Mesa problem.
Thank you. Karen.
First, I have to express my excitement in case you weren't following along in the last month or so, but we just had our consent decree. We approved that at the APCD, and that's the agreement between APCD and state parks that removed permitting out of the issue about Rule 1001, and this question specifically spoke about Rule 1001. This removes a major obstacle for those mitigations to get started, and so many people in this room have been waiting and waiting and waiting for that to start. So I'm very excited about that. The State Parks has already started with some mitigation plans. There is more to come. Coastal Commission will get involved, but they so far have been cooperative with some emergency permitting. We hope that that continues. The APCD Board of Directors has not yet seen a full mitigation plan, but the barriers have been lifted, thank goodness, or hopefully continued, and we should see some progress very soon. In addition to the mitigations out of the dunes, it's incumbent on the county to be sure that other steps get taken. For example, with the Phillips 66 project, there are PM10 implications there, or impacts there. I would like to see any and all mitigations for these impacts done within District 4. It makes no sense to mitigate those anywhere else. We can also plan for replacement of trees lost to development and clear cutting on the mesa. We now clearly understand that was not a good move. It might not help today in this moment, but it'll definitely help our children. Thanks.
Thank you.
Mike. I pretty much agree with both of the speakers. I'm glad that the proposed settlement is moving forward, but we need to understand the dialogue the last year or two has been focused on one part of the problem, and that's the state park. The project they're doing now is like $1 million, and it's going to for like till June, and it maybe at best will create an improvement of about 15%. So clearly there's a lot more to be done. And I think where we need to start is we need to start with what we already know. If you go back to the 90s, we knew when those developments were first planned with a specific plan in the IRs, we knew that it was going to create a PM10 problem. That was a given, and it was going to come from the way that development was done. There were mitigating factors that were supposed to have been adhered to minimize that. They weren't in a lot of cases. There were a lot more trees cut than were supposed to be cut. Everyone knows the trees were there, and they did a good job while they were there. But you know, all that clear cutting went going on. Those of us who were around at the time knew what was going to happen. I mean, you didn't have to be a rocket scientist to understand that. There's supposed to be certain county inspections. There's supposed to be certain construction standards. Just a lot of stuff that was supposed to have been done that didn't do. The county for a while did some inspections, and they decided they didn't need to do that anymore. And you know, I think maybe now it's a good time for us to move on and resume those. Paving the roads. There are a lot of things that were in those documents back in the mid-90s, and I think we need to go back and look at those, and we need to do what we said we were going to do way back then.
Thank you. Okay. Our next question is going to be posed by Charlotte, and so you know that the next pattern for the next two questions, we're going to go back to the original pattern of Karen, Lynn, and Mike. Okay, so Charlotte.
The Napomo community has a long history of people committed to preserving local heritage and history, such as the Old Town Napomo Association and the Dana Adobe. What have you done as a citizen or elected official to demonstrate that future generations will know something about our rich local history, and how would you support this as supervisor?
Thank you. This is an issue that is near and dear to my heart. And remember that I was a history major. Go Bruins. Mm-hmm. As you may know, Arroyo Grande has a very active historical society, and historic preservation is in our DNA via our general plan. Napomo has also shown the same dedication to its heritage via its Old Town Napomo and the Dana Adobe. These organizations are dedicated to protecting the character and historic heritage of our community. As an elected official, I have repeatedly voted to preserve and protect historic structures in our downtown.
A lot of the founding members of Napomo that work with our local governments to get things accomplished, whether it be the extension of Tuft Road or the barbershop, Save the Barbershop from 1882. So you have very capable individuals working with those different organizations, Old Town and Dana Adobe. As a supervisor, you work with those groups. When I've attended different meetings, we have different public officials come down, people from the roads department come down and talk to them, et cetera. So I think the less government intervention, the better with these organizations. When they need help, they call in a supervisor or call in the different departments of government that can lend a hand, and that's how I would handle it.
Thank you.
Hi. 20-some years ago, when the Price Adobe burned down, it was a tragic loss. At that time, I became concerned about the Price Anniversary House, because it was a shack, it was in terrible condition, and it was endangered by the same kind of accident. So I got together with a friend of mine, Chuck Fellows, who is Mr. Preservationist around here, and we started the Friends of the Price House. And obviously, that park has blossomed. More recently, I got together with Chuck again recently, and we're working on a narrow-gauge railroad display for the old Central Coast Railway right where it used to go through the village. So, you know, this is the kind of stuff that I love. And you know, in whether it's Napomo or Oceano or any place else where there's heritage and there's something that needs to be preserved, I'm there and I will be there.
Thank you, Mike. Okay, Jose is posing our next question.
What is your position with regard to the expansion of the Napomo Community Park to include a community center, community pool, and other amenities for both children and adults?
You have the best radio voice.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited about the opportunities that Napomo Community Park offers. And I'll tell you that at our recent Complete Community Survey, that survey showed without question that Napomo is underserved with regard to family recreation. But this project, as we all know, is not without controversy. The master plan and accompanying EIR have both been accepted and certified with the county. There's also a lawsuit pending to try and stop that master plan. I honestly believe that there is room for compromise, and I will, as supervisor, facilitate the discussions needed to find that middle ground. I believe that parks are an integral part of our community fabric, and this one is truly part of the heart of Napomo. Thank you.
Thank you. Lynn?
This issue was one of Paul's babies. I mean, Paul wanted this park to go through in the worst way, and he worked hard to facilitate that with the master plan and the phases that the park was going to encounter. He realized and saw a need for children to have a place to go here. We had a community center that burned down, and he realized that kids needed to be involved in things, had a safe place to go and a safe place to play. And he worked really hard to facilitate that process to occur and to unfold over the generations and years that the plan was there. There is a lawsuit. One of the issues with the lawsuit is the facilities and ability for people that have horses to ride their horses. We moved here because we have horses and we like to ride horses. I do think this community has a need for that too. So while I believe this park should go through as planned, I think something needs to be done about the people that want to ride horses, because they too have lost their area to do that. And it is a rural community, and you have a lot of horse people down there. So it's important to me too. But this was Paul's baby, and if you believed in Paul and you wanted to see things accomplished that Paul did, and his life was cut too short, then you need to look at who supported Paul in the past and the supporters that Paul had, who they are supporting right now, I think, if you want to decide who to vote for.
Thank you. Mike?
Yeah, I agree. The master plan is a good plan, and I think it should go forward. I'm confident the lawsuit is going to be settled, and the equestrian needs are going to be met. It shouldn't be as contentious as it is, and I think it can be worked out. I think it's going to be developed as it should, and I think the equestrian needs are going to be met. I know last Saturday, I love the park. It's just a wonderful asset to the community. I spent last Saturday there with a whole lot of kids, went home hoarse from cheering them on. But I love the facility, and I'd like to see it improved and expanded.
Thank you. Okay. Our next question will be presented by Tom, and we'll start with Mike, Lynn, and Karen, and then Mike, Lynn, and Karen again for the next two questions.
If you're elected supervisor,
a lot of folks supporting one candidate or another candidate, but I think we need to work harder to get the community in here, or we need to go out there, because you know we're not necessarily achieving that this evening, and I really wish that we could. The Outreach Council put on a Latinas in Education forum the other night. Karen was a part of that. You know, that was one of the most exciting things I've been to in I don't know how long. You know, those young ladies were inspirational, and if their stories are spread within the community, I think it's fantastic. But we need to draw more of the Latino community in, or we need to draw ourselves out and be more in the Latino community.
Thank you.
I agree with Mike on accessibility. If you're not accessible, your constituents can't talk to you. And as I mentioned earlier tonight, I don't think Latinos want anything different than what most of us want. They want a job in this county. They want a home to live in. Their family is very important to them. Latino outreach is a great start. I think one of the interesting things is we're here talking about this, but when you look at the number of Latinos that are employed by the county, it doesn't represent the population of San Luis Obispo. It's by far below that. So maybe we should look in our own house first and hire Hispanics to mimic what we have in our community here. So I think those are the things that I would do. And again, their contribution to agriculture is hugely important in this county, and the success of this county in agriculture is dependent on them in our community. So those are the things that I would look toward.
Thank you. Karen.
I think it's really important to recognize that if we continue to look at what Latinos need through the lens, through our cultural lens, we will continue to fall short for what they need. There's a huge cultural gap. That's evidenced. We saw it very clearly in the Latinas in Education Forum. We see it out in our communities. They don't need us to give them what we want. What we need to do is get into their communities. And what it all comes down to for those communities is trust. And they need to know which organizations they can trust. And for obvious reasons, trust for them is essential. It's essential through their whole community and their whole culture. So what we have to do is find everything we can to get out into their communities, establish that trust, and speak their language, and help them get access to the programs and services that they need. It will not happen if we just create websites. It will not happen if we just say, here you go. We have to go to them. One of the things that I will, it asks them the question, what will we do? And as I said, we've got CDBG funding that's coming down the pipe here in June, and I am looking very carefully at which organizations are supporting our Latino and Mestizo cultures, because they're underserved, probably the most underserved group in our whole county. So any organizations that are actually going out there into the communities and facilitating that trust, those are the ones that I'm going to be supporting as supervisor. So, again, we have to make sure that whatever we're doing to reach into the Latino community is not looked at through our own lens, but through theirs. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Dean, number 10.
Okay. Prior to your announcement to run for the District 4 supervisor, please describe the charitable and civic participation for which you were involved that demonstrates your commitment to public service. For each activity, describe what you did and how long you were involved.
Mike. Okay, I'm going to use my notes here if I can, so I try not to overlook something. I'm currently a director for real estate scam and fraud exposure, which has been a huge problem with in this county, as you've probably read in the media the last 5 or 6 years. I'm a founding director of Junior Achievement of San Luis Obispo County, and I was also a volunteer that went into the classrooms and taught the program. I was a director and a mentor, a big brother, if you will, for Big Brothers Big Sisters. I don't know if the record still stands, but at one time I had the longest match in the county's, in the program's history in the county. I've been a director of the Arroyo Grande Chamber of Commerce. I've been president of the Grover Beach Chamber of Commerce. I was a member of the local housing task force for the city of Arroyo Grande. In business, I've been president of the Pismo Coast Association of Realtors, as well as president of the Scenic Coast Association of Realtors. And in both of those, worked to found the realtor charities, the foundation that supports local charities, South County charities, so generously. And just last year, beginning of the
right now, in the past, we've been very involved with their auction, which is the big fundraiser during the year. I'm a hopeless animal rescuer and animal lover, so as of last year, I had rescued and rehomed over 100 animals. So that's kind of my passion there. And worked with different animal health organizations, spay and neuter clinics. I just got a call yesterday from someone asking me, there's a kitten that needs eye surgery. Are they going to euthanize it? And it's $1,000 eye surgery. Would I contribute to something like that? I worked in the veterinary business for years, so they all know who to call and who's the sucker for animals. But I have a passion for rescuing animals, so I've done that my whole life.
Karen?
Well, you all know my civic participation, so I'll run through it super fast. Arroyo Grande Planning Commission, Arroyo Grande City Council, and of course, Supervisor. Okay, you've heard that too many times. But charitable participation. First, I'll just go backwards to my time in the schools. I'm calling it charitable because I certainly, I actually did the math and found out I got paid 79 cents an hour for coaching swimming for a decade. I've volunteered with an organization called Brighten a Corner. It's a Christian organization that does special kind of extreme home makeovers for needy families. I've done Children's Resource Network for only a year, but have dived straight into that organization and am now serving as a board member. I served 4 years on the local UCLA Scholarship Committee, giving scholarships to local students, and I also was the founder of the Public Arts Committee and was happy to hand that off to the brilliant Trudy Jarrett, who's sitting here in the front row here. So we all got those things together and got that started. So those things, again, across a whole realm of things, these are things that I have given my time and my participation to, not just a check. Thank you.
Water, specifically shortage of water. What do you believe are the appropriate measures that the Board of Supervisors should take to address this problem for the long term?
We're going to start with Karen, Lynn, then Mike for the next two questions.
Well, first of all, the approach cannot be broad brush. The North County, the Coast, and the South County have fundamentally different issues, and it is just impossible to talk to all of these within 2 minutes. The North County, which you've all heard about ad nauseum probably for the South County, is in the middle of doing two things. We're forming a governance structure, or at least trying to, and an AB 3030 plan to get that basin into balance. What that means is, on the one hand, we're trying to figure out who is going to manage that basin, and on the other hand, we're trying to figure out what plans and what powers those whos will get to exercise. In the coastal community, seawater intrusion is the most important issue. In the South County, though, here, our basin is adjudicated, which brings with it a certain set of circumstances that make the range of options different. In all cases, we must be talking about long-term conservation efforts, and we have to be talking about bringing in supply. Supply can come from a couple different ways. You're probably going to hear both of the other people talk about desalinization. From the California Coastal Commission's point of view, they won't look at that for us until we start looking at recycled water. So that's where my attention is with the South County Sanitation District and talking about doing some serious upgrading there. We need to really, truly look at what we're doing there and how much water we're wasting out of our basin. I just met day before yesterday, with Public Works, Planning, NCSD, and County Council. This is the third meeting in 2 weeks, just like this, to determine what steps we're going to take here in the South County to be sure we can safeguard this dwindling resource. This is, again, not something we can solve in 2 minutes. We'll know in another month when the data from 2013 is submitted to the courts about how far we have to go in this basin going into next year and what's going to be mandated and what kind of cuts we're going to have to make. Again, the county is not a water purveyor here in the South County, so we really do have to be looking at things like conservation and leadership in those sorts of areas. Additionally, I've continued to push for the additional studies and data collection into the current year's planning priority list. It does us no good to put that on an agenda 3 years from now, so I led the vote to add that in to this year's planning. I've also voted to add staff in order to be able to do this, so let's put our money where our mouth is. If water's important to us, we sure as heck better have somebody there who can deal with that at our staff level. I'm also pushing for the first time to hire a hydrologist on staff because these issues, again, are not ones that we should be farming out. These are long-term steps, but what they'll do is they'll put the decision makers in the position of being able to make the best decisions possible with the data that they need to make sure that our communities are protected going into the future. Thanks.
Thank you.
Trampling on their property rights and taking their property without just compensation. So this is an area where we have to tread really lightly. I think you need to look at long-term things such as supply augmentation, putting bladder dams, and preventing the water when it rains from going back out to the ocean. And when you look at California, we've doubled our growth and have done nothing for water infrastructure in California. So something needs to be done. Desal long term. I think whatever investment you make in water will be a good investment. It's a better investment than things like the bullet train. I also think we need to stop putting fish in front of people. We've got agriculture and businesses that are dying in the Central Valley, they're getting no water supply this year, and we're more concerned about fish that cost $3 to $5 million because of Governor Brown. So I think you have to balance all the issues, but I think we need to start making some common sense decisions that put people before fish and correct the water situation, which we haven't done anything about in the 20 years that I've been in Napomo.
Thank you.
I do think we need, you know, everyone's correct. Every area has different issues. But there is a commonality that we all have issues. And I think that we need to have some sort of structure or some sort of way to distribute any supplemental sources to help pay for whatever the supplemental sources are going to be, because whatever they are, I promise you, they're going to be very, very expensive. And when you have a little water company here, a CSD here, a city here, you know, you've got all these different purveyors, and if each one is doing their own thing, it's going to be very, very, very expensive, whatever that thing is. Desal, I believe, should be the last thing we should be looking at. You know, there is so much water today that's just going into the ocean. All it needs is, you know, essentially the same kind of treatment as you would treat seawater. You know, and tertiary treatment and reuse that. You know, Phillips has a lot of water. They're just, you know, using once and off it goes. The sewage treatment plants. Another thing that I think we need to look at that, you know, a couple weeks ago or a few weeks ago, we had a pretty good storm. And, you know, it just is painful, given what we're going through, to look out and watch this huge quantity of water just going down curbs and gutters and out to the ocean. I think we need to better retain what water we have on land, whether it's storm runoff, whether it's tertiary treatment, whether it's conservation, whether it's all those things as it should be. We need to take care of what we have now before we start trying to get desal plants through the Coastal Commission. That's going to be tough. And if it does, there are a lot of problems that come along with that, namely, you know, obviously a lot of brine. Thank you.
Thank you. Jose?
If the residents of Nipomo decide that they want to incorporate Nipomo as its own city, will you support their efforts?
Is that me?
Karen, yes.
Okay. In a word, yes. Oh, I'm just kidding. I mean, I'm not kidding, but this is one of those questions that it's a long, long answer, but a short one to get to the real heart of it. This is a relatively prescribed process, and the county has very little control over it. The only real place where the county has discretion here is with regard to the formulas that they use to do predictive analysis of things like incoming tax revenues and expected revenues. So I know that this is something that's very important to a lot of people here in Nipomo. I recently provided Richard Malveros, who is the current president of the Nipomo Chamber, I provided for him a very detailed analysis about what it would take to get there, including some charts and some graphs. I brought it with me here today, but we're not going to have time to talk about that. But anybody who is interested in that, please email me at the county email address at cray@co.slo.ca.us. You can just find me on the website, and I'll be glad to email you the same thing so that you can see that it is a very long and involved process. I'll be honest, it's a difficult one. It's an extremely high hurdle since the new laws were well, they're not new, they're 20 years old, but since the laws on incorporation were passed. But it is possible, and again, I'd be glad to provide that information to you in just a moment's notice. It just takes a couple clicks. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is something Nipomo residents have talked about for probably 20 years. There have been meetings in the past. There have been organizations that promoted this. And it's increasingly more difficult to do. There's a revenue neutrality issue, which basically in a nutshell means that if you form a new town, the town has to be able to survive on its own and not take county monies, and you can't take too much away from the county. It's a decision that's made by LAFCO, but if citizens want to do it, I'm all for doing it.
That government that's closest to the people works best. The city of Bell notwithstanding. Okay. You know, and it is a long process. It is a complicated process, and you folks know that, you know, better than me. You've been through it. You know, a lot of you have been through that process here. The problem is, as Lynn alluded to, there has to be a tax base, and that's a place where the county can look, and they can release some tax base, or they cannot. And that's the question that I believe, I wasn't involved in your earlier attempt at the incorporation, but I believe that was a part of the problem from what I read in the media. And so I think we need to, you know, I think we need to support it. And if we're going to support it, and we're going to say we're going to support it, I think it has to be with tax dollars. And where the tax base is going to be and who's going to get it.
Thank you. Okay. Tom, our next question.
In your opinion, what are the challenges that are faced by the Oceano community, and what will you do to address them?
Okay, we're going to start with Lynn and then go to Karen and Mike.
I've always looked at Oceano as a diamond in the rough. I think it's a beautiful community that's close to the beach, but they do face issues. When Paul first took office, there was a huge flood, and they had issues with flooding. And so I've actually looked at that facility and taken tours of the area that flooded and the grate and runoff ditch and issues involved with that. And what it comes down to is over-regulation by the government to clean the reeds out of the grates that caused all this flooding. You have to work with 20 different organizations to do that. To me, that's absolutely ridiculous. People used to just go in there and cut the reeds down, and they can't do that anymore. So that's one of the problems that Oceano has faced in the past, flooding issues. You have a higher Hispanic population there, so you have the problems that come with that, the unemployment. Oceano has a higher unemployment than Napomo, and Napomo has a higher unemployment than what the rest of the county has. Homelessness is a big issue there. We have a high homeless population there, as we do in the county. Curbs, gutters, and sidewalks are an issue. You have residents and schools where the students have to walk in the streets to get to the schools. So that's a big issue, too. We need safe routes for our kids. So those are the challenges I think Oceano faces. They're doing things to mitigate those challenges, but those are the issues that I find most important and that I would work on if elected supervisor. Thank you.
Well, one of the things that I heard loud and clear right before I took office from Oceano and from the people that I spoke with, again, but right before I came in, was don't forget about us. And what I found right as I took office was that there was you may be familiar with the Gower Beach Equestrian Staging Center, and they wanted to move it into Oceano, which may or may not be a good idea, but nobody had asked Oceano. And so I made sure that we had representation from Oceano at that meeting so that they could be part of that decision-making process. That had not been happening prior to that. Another issue that we have in Oceano is crime. And one thing that I would definitely be in favor of is adding a sheriff's deputy to our South County beat. We need it. Things have grown here, and the positions are still the same, so it's time to add more. Another thing that I've worked on is the Zone 11A upgrade, and that might be a lot of fancy government terms for you, but we've got to maintain the levee, and we've got a levee system that is in serious jeopardy, and we are waiting on federal funding and federal permitting to be able to get that done. I was able to get some wheels greased up at the state level to get our the state-level permitting done, but now it's time to get up to that federal level. So I'm working very hard to make sure that that can go through. And again, that is part of what protecting Oceano looks like. There's a downtown plan, or the Oceano-specific plan that was just introduced, and we have to make sure that just doesn't get shelved and that it is actually used as the planning document that it is intended to be. And lastly, we have our farmers market that's coming forward, and I know there's at least one representative from that here. And those are the kinds of things that we need to do to actually build communities. And one thing that I was able to help with is help them get their fee waiver so that they can go ahead and start this. So hopefully they've got fundraisers coming up in the next few weeks. I hope that you come down and support them. But again, building communities, protecting those communities, and getting our public safety into place. Thank you.
Thank you. Mike.
There's almost nothing left to say. yeah, everything that both of them have mentioned are absolutely true. The only thing that I would add is, in my opinion, the reason things don't maybe get, now let's get her done.
D.
Folks in the audience, but these seats are getting hard. What role do you believe partisan politics has, and if any, in the position of supervisor? Do you consider yourself a partisan politician, or will you have to vote along your party lines on every issue?
Okay, we're starting with Lynn on that one.
That's an interesting question for me, because I believe I was the recipient of partisan politics with regard to the supervisorial position. For 51-plus years, we've had a Republican supervisor down here who's been elected by a conservative district. Whether you like that or not, those are the facts. Paul was a Republican. Cacho was a Republican. I don't necessarily think because you're a Republican or a Democrat, you can't be independent. I think both can have an independent mind on things, and I think we've had past supervisors that have had an independent mind. However, I make no bones about the fact that I am a Republican and I'm the only Republican running. And I'm not a Republican because I consider myself a partisan politician. It's because I believe in some of the basic tenets of the Republican Party, which to me are less government intervention, believing in the individual, and less taxes and regulation. So that's the reason I am a Republican. If you want to call that partisan or not, I guess that's your decision and you'll choose to vote for me or not based on that. But I do think that this is a partisan position in running for it, and you would hope that once you are a supervisor, you put partisan politics aside. And I don't necessarily think that the issues, I think we have a very partisan board right now. I don't think they vote on issues because of the Republican or Democrat philosophy. I think they vote on issues based on the issues and the philosophies that they bring to the table. So it's unfortunate, but that's the way politics is. And I make no bones about saying that I'm the only Republican that's running in this race. And if you don't like that, I guess you vote for one of the other two. But that's how it is in my book.
Karen.
I think there may be some confusion of what partisan means. And partisan means that you identify with that party and you make your decisions based on that party. So when answering this question, the answers are no, no, and no. Remember I told you at the beginning I was going to try and keep it simple? This one's an easy one. It's no, no, and no. And when we talk about the gubernatorial appointment, when we talk about it belonged to a certain group, we are discounting the fact that we judge people by their individual merits and by their individual backgrounds and their qualifications for office. We do not judge that based on whether they are Democrat or Republican. So to take it that way, thank you. To characterize it that way says a lot. Others will try and scare you into believing that I contribute to partisanship, but it's been quite the opposite. And I want to set something very straight that was stated earlier today. Ms. Compton said that she believed that there were a lot of 3-2 votes. There have been precisely 4 3-2 votes since I've taken office. 2 of them went with one group. 2 of them went with the other. That's the definition of going issue by issue. And when she said that I vote with 2 of those people over 90-something percent of the time, she doesn't tell you that that also includes some of the others as well. So let us be very careful with the fear tactics that are put out here about partisanship. The numbers just aren't there. I warned you about this at the beginning, and I'm standing firm on this. The numbers just are not there. I have approached this issue by issue. I have spoken to every constituent who's wanted to talk to me. I have approached things with an open mind and an open textbook and done all the homework that I'm supposed to be doing, and the numbers bear out. Please do your homework before you make a decision like that. But the answer, again, just to give you some more data, if you compare my record to other supervisors, a different pattern emerges. On close votes, Meacham and Arnold vote together 67% of the time, close votes being defined as 3-2. Hill and Gibson vote together 83% of the time. I bring balance. Anyone who says differently is deceiving you. Thank you.
Mike.
The role of partisanship is going to be decided in this election. You know, to Lynn's credit, she makes no bones about it. You know, she's a Republican and believes in the Republican platform. And, you know, says, you know, to anybody, and I was sitting next to her at a meeting a while back, she says, yeah, I was recruited by the Central Committee. Mm-hmm. You know, I give her credit for that. You know, but to suggest that, for Karen to suggest that she's not partisan and that we should look at the facts, what I would suggest...
Charlotte?
What do you see as the value of tourism for San Luis Obispo County, and do you have an innovative idea that you would promote to encourage tourism?
Okay, and our next two questions will go Karen, Lynn, Mike.
I'll get my chair going first here. This was a fun one to think about, so thank you to whoever wrote this question. So many of them are such hard-hitting, we don't get a chance to actually dream about what we would do next. So I went and talked to one of my friends that I sit on the Arroyo Grande Tourism Board still. I'm still a member of that, even though I've now moved out of that the position that I was in before at City Council. So this is something that I've been involved with for many years. And one of the things that we've been talking about is the idea of adventure tours. This is something that's a trend all around the world. And this is to encourage the Central Coast as the whole package. So Savor the Central Coast has kind of done this, but really more in the North County. There's been a little bit of South County. But this is where visitors can stay somewhere. They can do something active, like making wine or cooking a dish with a chef or going to on a hike or wine tasting or doing my son did the biplane the other day. But I think it's important to pick key complementary businesses together. You can do wine dining activities or shopping and spas, and you give people a reason to do it all and stay here while they do it on the Central Coast. Again, we often hear about Paso and San Luis, but they use our beaches, and they use our advertising, and they use our hotels. We just need great marketing and organized PR and a plan to get them here and get them to enjoy their first day and come back and come back and come back to District 4. Thank you.
Lynn.
Well, tourism is hugely important to this county, as is agriculture. Again, the top two income contributors to this county. The first thing I would do is let private enterprise handle it and get government out of the way. Quit thwarting people and trying to do what they want to do to increase tourism in this county. We talked about this briefly earlier, the event ordinance that's coming back up again. That really penalizes small bed and breakfasts. That penalizes facilities like the Edwards Barn who want to do things, small weddings, things like that for the community. So I would vote against issues like that. I basically think the government should just get out of the way and let private enterprise handle it, and they do a good job of handling it. Don't punish the industries that bring in the tourism here. The Oceano Dunes brings in $171 million to this county. It's hugely important. It brings in tourists. It brings hotels. It brings people who use the gas stations. They support the restaurants. Don't punish industries like that that bring tourism into our county. And I guess that would be my first suggestion.
Thank you. Hi.
Once again, I agree with both. You know, the events ordinance is going to have a impact, if it's passed, on agricultural tourism. There's no question about it. What Karen is talking about is something that I brought up 10, 12 years ago when I was president of the, probably longer than that now, of the Grover Beach Chamber of Commerce. We were working on a program to bring people up, partnering with Amtrak, and like 3 or 4 day passes, tickets, and do just exactly the kinds of things that Karen was talking about. And the idea at that time was patterned after the Disney Institute, which has sort of morphed into something a little bit different than it was back then. But that, I think, provides tremendous opportunity because we have such a diverse county and a diversified South County, and there's so much to do that I just think that's going to be huge. And I think if the Grover Beach Inn and conference center is completed, that's going to be a wonderful fit with the Amtrak station being essentially across the street.
Thank you. Okay. Our next question, Jose.
Please tell us what leadership traits you feel are important for a supervisor to have, and provide examples in your life when you displayed these traits.
Karen.
Okay. Sorry, it's hard to keep track.
Okay, I know.
Well, first of all, I think the real issue is making sure that we can listen and then also actually hear what people are saying and be willing to have those difficult conversations. There are many, many times as supervisor where I have had to make difficult phone calls or have difficult discussions. And they're not fun and they're not easy. But that's what we do when we are consensus builders. That's what we do when we build a community. We have to instill confidence in other people that your leader knows things, it allows you to keep the focus that you need to keep your eye on that ball I was talking about, to keep this community together and to keep it moving forward and to help us find that consensus and middle ground that allows us to move forward as a community. Again, there's not enough time to give you lots of examples. I'd love to give Mesa Dunes as one of those examples. This is one where we had a mobile home park conversion that was happening. It's technically in Arroyo Grande, but up here in the Mesa. And they came to the board to ask for, the business owners came to the board to ask for an overturning of what the planning staff had done. And it was a really difficult process, and we had literally thousands of emails coming at us from so many different directions, and through negotiation at the board in real time with the public there, we came up with a 5-0 vote that was the right vote. And that's what you have to be able to do, is be able to bring people together, to build consensus, to listen, to be smart enough to think on the fly and keep that ball rolling. Thank you.
Well, I think the most important characteristics as a supervisor are honesty, integrity, and moral character. And I think if you don't have any of those, how can you be trustworthy in that position? So I think those are the most important characteristics. I think you need to have perseverance. There are very complex tasks and issues. We talked about the rail spur, et cetera, that need discussions. You need to look at both sides. You need to understand how to evaluate and get to the core of what the issues are and be able to multitask. I think running a business for 20 years, being in the business world for 30 years, you don't succeed with the different companies you've worked for if you don't have those tasks. You don't graduate from law school if you can't multitask and understand complex issues. So I think those are the things that I've done in my background that show that I have those qualities.
Thank you.
I think independence and persistence are critical. And I'm going to try and tell you a quick story. It goes back a few years. When I worked for the Board of Supervisors in Kern County for 8 years, when we came into office, similar to right now, I'm talking about the rail spur, I'm sharing my opinions, and I'm getting called unethical for it. Okay? Same thing was going on in Kern County at that time. Los Angeles Department of Water and Power was attempting to build what would have been the world's largest nuclear power plant out in the middle of our farm region, using the groundwater to cool it. Okay, we sided with the farmers, and we didn't think that was a good thing. And it was a rough fight. It was a tough fight. It was a prolonged fight. And people would say things like, well, you shouldn't take an opinion on it because you're in elective office. And that's not the way it was. That's not what leadership is. And ultimately, with the help of a referendum, we defeated it. And that was the right thing to do. That was the right thing for the county. That was the right thing for the people. It was the people's will. But it took a lot of work. It took a lot of grief. And it took strong independence when people would say, you shouldn't take a position.
Okay, and our last question is going to be a kind of a fun question, and Tom gets to ask it, and we'll go Karen, Lynn, Mike.
San Luis Obispo County was recently recognized by a Gallup Healthways Wellbeing Index report as one of the best places to live for its overall well-being. What is the one thing you identify as the most special factor that makes it so, and what would you do to preserve it?
Well, the Gallup report was specifically talking about what makes healthy communities, and their specific focus, their areas of focus, were basic access to necessities, daily healthy choices like fresh food, work-related experiences, and community and social involvement. So if I was to pick from what they based that subject or that survey on, it would be the community and social involvement. And that is definitely what puts us over the top. If there was one we wouldn't have made that list. We have so many, but I'll boil it down to this. The most special thing with District 4 with regard to what makes this the best place to live is our community and social involvement. We live a rural lifestyle, but we have access to great shopping and entertainment and food. We live in small communities where everyone knows each other's name. Cue the
cheers music now. We've managed to keep that atmosphere, but not by shutting people out, but by welcoming them into our neighborhoods with open arms. We balance our individual needs with the needs of our community. This is not a place where "I got mine and you go get yours" finds any traction. We're a community that cares deeply about one another. But it can get better. We can create physical environments where physical activity is safe, like expanding our bike paths and revitalizing our parks and walking and hiking.
And so do things that help businesses to hire people instead of punishing businesses and driving people out of this county. And at the rate we're going in California, we are doing that. We're driving businesses out of this state. So that's the biggest thing that I would do and focus on.
Thank you.
Yeah, there are a lot of these studies, and they all, you know, focus on quantifiable criteria. But I agree with Lynn. You know, what makes it special is the people. I remember I had someone visiting. Oh, this has probably been quite a few years ago, and they'd gone out for breakfast, and they came in, and we were going to have a meeting, and they said, "You wouldn't believe what just happened to us. We were walking out of the restaurant after breakfast, and these complete strangers said good morning." They were absolutely blown away by it. But that's the kind of people we are here. And that's pretty much the whole county, especially the South County. Napomo, was it 2007, I think? Was one of the magazines rated you number one, one of the 100 best places to live. You know, all that has to do with criteria, but the thing is the people, and there's nothing we can do that's going to make any of you or any of us any better. It's just who we are here, and I'm just confident we're going to continue to be who we are.
Thank you. Well, this concludes our question and answer format of the evening, and at this time each of the candidates will have a 3-minute closing remarks. And by way of draw earlier this evening, the order in which they will give their closing remarks is as follows. It will be Mike, then Lynn, and then Karen. Mike.
Thank you for listening to us. I'm sure there was something more important, or something maybe not more important, but certainly something more enjoyable you could have been doing this evening. I'd like to invite everybody to come on out to Dinosaur Ranch in Wasna Valley. The 27th, we're having a barbecue and some entertainment, but mostly what I'm looking for is the opportunity to talk in more detail with anybody that has any questions or any concerns they want to share. You know, going through these 2-minute spiels doesn't even begin to scratch the surface on any issue or any topic. You know, we're going to be out there, have the barbecue, come on out, information on the website, or just give me a call. You want more information, birdforsupervisor.com, Facebook, Bird for Supervisor. So there's a lot more information there on issues and my issues. And easiest thing to do is just pick up the phone, give me a call, 441-5133. I'll answer unless I'm talking to somebody else. But the main thing is, you know, take the time, learn more, and whatever you do, just remember to vote. On June 3rd, this is going to be a critical election. There's going to be a ton of money spent. We're watching the money come in now, and you just have to remember that where you see a lot of television commercials, where you see a lot of mailers, where you see a lot of stuff, somebody's paying for all that. And I think if you go, you check the link, find out who's paying for it for all of us, and then that will help you to make your decision. Thank you.
Lynn.
Thank you all for coming here. As Mike stated, there are way more interesting things to do than come listen to political speeches. It's difficult tonight to try to encapsulate your views on things in a 2-minute time frame. So there are a lot of really important issues going on in this county right now. And as I stated earlier, these decisions that this Board of Supervisors makes will affect us in this community for the next 10 to 20 years. So it's too important to just listen to a 2-minute speech about it. So again, call me and go to my website and basically talk to your friends about it. We've walked now, my campaign, over half of the households in this district, so we're listening to what's important to people and nothing's really a surprise in what we're hearing. We have an office in Arroyo Grande, and we just opened an office in Napomo. So please stop and visit me. I guess what I would close and say is, if you like the direction that Paul Teixeira had in this county, I think I'm your candidate. And I think I have more of his supporters that are in my camp than my other two competitors. And I think I more closely represent what Paul stood for and what Katja stood for than the other two candidates. But if you have questions about any of those, please feel free. I'll be around afterwards to answer those questions. And thank you all for coming out.
Thank you.
Karen.
The decision that you're going to make is going to be big. We've all said that. That's why you're all sitting here. So thank you for understanding that. I think there are a whole lot of people in this county that don't even have any idea what a supervisor does during their day. So thank you so much for recognizing the import of this. I want to take the opportunity to debunk a couple things that were said today, because I told you this was going to happen, and I'm going to undo it right now. First, I didn't mention today that there was an actual threat made here that the events ordinance will pass if I am elected. And I have never said a word about the events ordinance, but I'm going to say it right now so that we can be on the record. I have no interest in shutting down our small businesses and our agricultural farms that are relying on the events. This is a huge issue. The only reason that it is going to come forward is because the grand jury is forcing it to come forward. This is going to get sticky, and it's going to be a very difficult thing to solve, but I am here to tell you that I am in absolute support of all of those vendors who have those businesses. It was also stated that in February, the board voted to put a sales tax increase in the unincorporated areas. That absolutely is a fabricated lie. That is not true. The Board of Supervisors has taken no such vote. What the Board of Supervisors did was they voted on a legislative platform, whereas if the state were to take a position on that, then the Board of Supervisors would not oppose. That is very, very different than saying that there is to scare you into telling you that there is going to be a vote on sales tax. That is the fear that I told you was going to be part of this discussion tonight. There's been a lot of things thrown out there about who's contributing money to whom and whether or not this is partisan. And I encourage you that if you see, when you look at my 460s, and I hope you go to Mike's website for that, you'll see that I do have Democratic support. You'll also see that I have large business support. It's not typically Democrat. I have support across the board. So when you see D's and R's next to something, that doesn't belong in the discussion right now. And I've been trying so hard to debunk this because this fear is put out there to try and manipulate you into changing your vote. Please educate yourself and find out where that money is coming from. And speaking of that, a huge amount of money is coming into this election from outside this county and from outside this district, and specifically from North County for one of our candidates. It's an obscene amount of money that's coming to this campaign. And when you have the money to be opening up multiple offices and put up large posters everywhere, when you see those, I want you to think about those big posters mean big money. And that is something that you need to know. That's not true. Experience is critical. Do not forget this. This is no hobby. This is not something we do because we just felt like it, because it just came to us in the last few years. This is something I've devoted my life to. And again, please do your homework before you make your choice. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, I want to thank each of the ladies and gentlemen. I would like to thank each of the candidates. Number one, for sticking your necks out to serve this community. So, thank you very much, and best of luck to each of you.